Mr. Rayner Taylor, Rail 11. We were talking about conditions, you know, that you were living on the Western Front between 1917 and 1918 in the Somme area. Did you have much of a problem with rats?
There were rats everywhere. Everywhere there were rats. Big ones and small ones. I never knew anybody that did like them. But there were plenty of
rats. How were they a nuisance if they were?
Well, there were nowhere where you could put anything without them. Well, say you had a dugout. It was the home of the rats were in, and they would dig. If you had any food, a parcel, you were very lucky if the rats didn't get at it. Very lucky.
Did you try and kill them?
Oh, yes, but it was almost a waste of time. All you could do were... you wouldn't shoot them, of course, because one shot might awaken the whole front, you know. You only need one shot and everybody could hear you'd think there was an attack on both sides. And, of course, hell would let loose.
So how would you kill them?
Well, stick or anything. Anything that you could hit them with, if you could.
Would you use your bayonet?
Well, you could do, but usually your bayonet was on your rifle, you know.
Were there any other pests, you know, that made life misery?
No, I don't think so. Not that I know of. I couldn't recall.
Was there a problem with dead bodies, either left out in no man's land
half
buried?
Yes, there was. In between the lines, you would come across them, and it depended if there'd been a big flap on, and they couldn't recover the bodies, it would be a problem.
In what way?
Recovery of them.
Did they have any sort of particularly distinctive smell?
Yes, a sweet, sickly smell. It was quite a strong smell and all. Quite a strong one.
Did you get used to it, or was it...?
I couldn't say that you got used to it. I couldn't say that, because they always made an effort to recover bodies. Always.
Did you ever have to do that?
No. The Pioneer Corps used to do that. No, I never had any job like that. I never went on a burial party either. I never did that.
How did the weather affect life in the trenches?
Well, the weather was... It was almost a determining factor, you know. You could get a nice balmy day, or you could get a cool one when you spent your time trying to get warm. The weather did certainly affect you.
How would you try and get... When it was cold, how did you try and keep warm?
Well, ogling, or whatever you could call it, as many clothes as you had, and it was difficult, you know.
What about the wet?
Wet was awful. Now, depending on the area, because some areas were worse than others. Some were fairly dry and drained easily. Others didn't drain at all. On the bottom of the trench, when it rained, of course, the rain came in down the... And it meant you were standing in water. And it was bad. And they used to make duck boards. They called them duck boards. They were long planks of wood with slats across you, which held it, kept it over the water. But rain was a bad. It was a bad thing. That
did it affect your health at all when it was cold and wet? Because you weren't that strong, were you?
Well, it seems strange that I don't know. Thinking back. Why, there weren't a lot more people affected by the conditions than there seemed to be. There was a period when people had a period of wet, cold weather. They got a condition known as trench feet. That was its name. What it meant, I don't know, except that your feet became... they became very swollen and utter, in the severe cases, people lost toes through it, you know.
Did you have to take any precautions against that?
There's no precautions you could take. There were, except, I remember there was a ration or a distribution of whale oil. I remember that, but I only remember it once. And even today, I can't help but laugh how the powers that be expected you in the line to put whale oil on your feet. Now, you must understand this. For a start, you've got puttees on. You know what the puttees were? Long strips that you wound round your legs. You'd have to take those off, and you'd have to take your shoes off, and you'd have to take your socks off, and rub your feet with whale oil. Now, make no mistake, you'd be sat or stood out in the rain on a cold day. And how they expected you to do it, I just don't know. But they sent a distribution of whale oil. They were supposed to stop me from having trench feet, but I didn't see it distributed very often. But
did you try and put it on when you...
Oh, yes. Oh, it was a pantomime trying to do it. Because when they sent you, it was the be-all and end-all, so, of course, everybody wanted to have a do with this. Well, all.
What about frostbite? Was that, you know...
Well, I never experienced that. I never experienced it, but I believe there was quite a lot of it in various parts of the line.
What about trench fever?
Well, I don't know what they meant by a trench fever. I don't know really what they meant by that.
Was there any problem with either constipation or dysentery from the various difficulties of life?
I've no recollection of it being a problem which affected so many people at a time. I've no recollection of that. Although I have heard of dysentery affecting some units, but it didn't affect them as much in France as it did in the Middle East. When these fellows came over from the Middle East, they brought the stories of dysentery with them, you know.
And constipation, you didn't notice?
No.
What about your own personal health, your actual health? After you'd been ill with the flu, were you after that?
I seem to be all right. Yes, I seem to be. I don't find that I was... No, I was a young animal, that's all.
Now, what about a typical day's routine when you're in the front line? Starting, if we can, with stand two. Would you have a stand
two? Oh, yes, always, just before dawn.
Could you explain exactly what
everybody stood to? Well, you'd have sentries who stood on the fire step looking over, and by that time, your patrol would have come in. Everything being equal, the patrol would have come in. Now then, comes the time, which is, we always reckon to be the most dangerous time, just before at dawn. And the word would go along, stand to. That was the other. And everybody stood to. You'd stand, you were alert, the sentries were alert, were on the fire steps. And everybody was alert until it became daylight and it was realised that there were no attack developing. And then, of course, the day's duty started. Whatever they were, was...
Did you have any breakfast?
If you had what you had, what had come up during the night in the rations, you'd have a breakfast of kinds.
And then what would the day's duties be?
Well, for one thing, you'd try and keep your rifle clean. You'd try.
Was that difficult in the line?
Oh, very difficult at times. So much so that they issued a cover for the breach of the mechanism. They issued a cover, and they were all right, those. They prevented them from getting clogged up with mud, you know.
What was it made of?
It was... It was like a canvas, a thick canvas material with pressstones, two or three pressstones on. And they were made so they would just fit that like a pouch over it.
And that was effective for the men?
Oh, yes, yes.
What about the other end?
I don't know. It used to talk about putting a cork in, but I've never seen that, don't you? No, I've never. No.
So one thing you would be work on your... You keep your rifle.
Oh, right? Yes. They were very, very particular about that.
Inspected regularly?
Regularly. Every day they'd be inspected.
Would this be the business for the
nail? Oh, yes. With the thumb. Thumbnail.
They still went to that length of checking it?
Oh, yes, yes. Because you had a... The cleaner, you had a pull through.
You told me about that, yeah, yes. Yeah. But they still were just as strict.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
What other duties would you, or things to do, would you have during the day?
Well, usually, boredom. Boredom. Make no mistake about that. Write letters or anything till it was your turn to go on sentry again. And that's how it was, you know.
Would you talk to each other?
Oh, yes, yes.
What sort of things did you talk about?
Well, anything. How nice it would be to be at home, and how... what you could eat. You remember somebody's special dish, you know, and you just kidded yourself in that respect.
Did you tell each other what you'd done before the war?
Oh, yes, you knew invariably, you knew everybody's business. And it's surprising the number of jobs that you found that other people had, you know. In the cotton trade, it was rather a complicated job. And I found these Welsh fellows were very, very interested in what happened. And wages, what kind of wages people got. And I'll tell you something else I found out with being with the Welsh Regiment. I found out what a difference there was between North and South Wales. Greater than there is in England. And I don't know where the line of demarcation was, but those in the South Wales, which is an industrialised part of Wales, considered... These in the North Wales, they considered them as savages. It wasn't just an isolated... They didn't really consider
them. Were
there
men from both ends of Wales?
Oh, yes.
Italian?
Oh, yes. Yes.
Would they talk about this difference between them with you?
Well, oh, yes. They used to have a word. They each had a word for the other, you know, and it wasn't very complimentary.
Do you remember what they were?
No, I don't. I don't, because I was never a... I was never a great friend of theirs. I didn't like the idea of them talking in Welsh whilst we were there. I didn't used to like that, you know. But there were some quite smashing blokes. And they depending from which end of Wales they were, they would... I never knew anybody...
Which end did you prefer?
Well, from the south, I think, because...
The industrial one?
Yes, I think because... there weren't as many of them from the south that spoke Welsh. Now, the majority of them from the North Wales, they spoke Welsh. And these from the south didn't. And, of course, they always used to treat the North Wales lads as if they were all farm labourers, you know. Where the South Wales fellows were industrialised. It was quite an event with them lot.
Did you ever talk about the war much? When you're in the front, during this typical day, would they talk about the war and what was happening?
Yes, when they could get up. Nobody talked about war aims or anything like that. We just believed what we'd been told.
So it wasn't a big topic then?
Oh, no. The biggest topic was leave when you were coming home. And that was a big topic. It came quite a... It became, this is the one thing you look forward to, leave.
So you'd all be chatting about that?
Oh, yes.
Did you all have superstitions? I mean, were there any superstitions to develop about things in the trenches?
Yes, there was.
Do you remember
any? I don't know. I didn't have any. There were, yes, some people had put... They always carried certain objects with them. I did hear of things like that, you know, but I never...
But you didn't have any yourself?
No.
So, if you weren't actually on guard, would there be any other duty, or looking after your rifle, would there be anything else other than just sitting and chatting?
Very little, unless there were some repairs wanting doing to the trench. That.
What sort of repairs?
Well, repairing the sides, if the sides were crumbling or something like that, you know.
But nothing major?
No.
Right, now, if you were on guard duty, what did you have to do if you were on guard during the day?
Well, you just keep looking over the parapet.
Wouldn't that make you a bit liable to snipers?
Well, it would do, but usually... If there were a case of you're liable to snipers, they used to provide you with a periscope. And you'd look through this periscope. You look, very primitive thing, you know. It was like a square box with a sloping mirror and a mirror at the bottom. And you know it's this mirror. It's over the top.
Could you see all right through them?
Oh, yes, not bad at all. You felt better with looking down there than chucking your head over the top, you know.
Which was more usual, to use a periscope or to just look?
Well, it did what it wants to get, depending which part of the line you were in. Some places, you'd be quite close to the other lines. Others you'd be hundreds and hundreds of yards apart, you know.
And what was the sentry's job? What were they looking for?
Looking for activity on the other side.
What would he do if he saw something?
He would report it very quickly. Oh, yeah.
Who to?
Whoever was in charge of the section he was in. Yeah.
Now, during the day, you know, during this typical day we're talking about, who would be in charge? Would it be your section NCO?
Yes.
Was it NCOs you saw most of, or who ran the day-to-day life? The NCOs or the officers?
The NCOs in the section, and then the second lieutenants in the platoons, and after that came the senior officers in the companies.
And which was most important to your life?
Oh, well, the section. The section you were in was most important.
So the one who told you, most, the one who had biggest impact on you... Was your section NCO?
Oh, yes.
Would that be a sergeant or an...
A sergeant, yes.
You don't remember their name?
No, I think he was called Morgan, this fella, who were a sergeant.
Did things relax a bit in the trenches with this? With the NCOs?
Oh, yes.
Were you on first name terms?
No, not usually. Usually... You call him by his rank. And this is why it's one of the... And I've found it in industry since then. It's one of the most difficult jobs, promotion within your own company. I think anybody who can handle promotion in their own company, there's something going for them. You've been on friendly terms with someone for so long, you've lived with them, you've worked with them, and they're promoted and you've got to sort of pay them due deference. And it's difficult to handle. And it was difficult to handle that. Starting from a lance corporal, immediately a man became a lance corporal, you were different. He wasn't accepted in his old mob, as you could say.
Even as a lance corporal?
Even as a lance corporal. It started right from a lance corporal, and as he progressed up a corporal, became a little bit higher in the hierarchy, and then a sergeant.
So it made a distinct difference?
Oh, yes, it did. Yes.
What about the officers? Did you see much of them in the front line?
Not a great lot. You see your second lieutenant, and often, mind you, almost every day, your company commander would make his way along to inspect to see that everything was all right. And then he'd be back to his company headquarters. His company headquarters would probably be connected by telephone to the battalion headquarters, which were still further behind again, you see.
Did you mind that they had the dugouts and servants and things like that?
No, we just thought that it was right. It was the done thing.
Were you ever an officer's servant? At this stage, I know you...
Not at that stage, oh, no, no. No.
Right, so during the day, was there much... This, you say, was a fair... You know, during... You were mainly in the Somme area.
Yeah.
I know it's different, a long time to cover. Do you remember much shelling? Much about shelling?
Well, it depended. You see, it could start... It could start with nothing and finish up having spent about £1 million. Somebody during the night, some nervous sentry, might see something, and when you look in the night, you see a lot of things that are not there. Make no mistake about that. You see shadows that appear to move. You hear sounds that nobody else hears.
This is when you're on sentry duty, is it?
Oh, yes, it is difficult.
It's frightening, then.
Yes, it is. It is. You really need, you need two of you. You do really need two of you on sentry.
And were the two of you?
Oh, usually. Not always.
So if you saw something, would you ask your friend?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, you say, what's that, you know. But usually in the night, and this happened on every part of the front, they used to put very lights up, and they put them up regularly. Now, these were things, and still are, they lit up the whole area. Now, you could see then, if you was looking, and you could see if there were any activity. And the lessons you were taught, and it was one of the hardest lessons to accept. If you were caught in what was known as no man's land on a patrol, and you were caught with a very light up, still, and it was the most difficult thing that I know. If you do what you're supposed to, you stand there, you don't move anything until this light goes down again. Now, bear in mind this. You're exposed to hundreds of eyes. And if you make one movement, anything could happen. But if you're still, it's accepted as part of the landscape. Now, I found that, and everybody else I've ever spoken to found that one of the most difficult things to do. Because common sense... Oh, well, or self-preservation says, get down. And in the getting down, you've been seen something moving. Whereas if you stand still, you're accepted as being part of the landscape. Now, I found that as a very, very difficult thing to accept. Very difficult indeed. I have been caught out quite a number of times on these patrols.
I'll come back to that. Getting back now to the artillery, you were saying about how it would start from...
Well, it was, as I said, from a nervous sentry seeing something and he fire. And immediately, the other side would fire. And it grew up from that. And both sides were shooting and there were nothing. And then the machine guns would open out. And then the artillery would open out. All from nothing. And this happened not once, many times this did. Many, many times. And there'd be thousands of rounds of ammunition and shells fired just because a nervous sentry had, but on the other hand, he might have been so nervous, but I've seen something that was there. You see, so...
Did you ever start one of these crusades?
No, I don't think I ever did. It was a temptation, you know. But I don't think I ever did. I don't think so. I'd like to think I didn't.
What about normal artillery fire on German fire on you? Was there much of it, shell fire?
No, not a great lot. Well, it depended on the time. It wasn't something that was going on every day, no.
What was it like under shell fire? Can you remember?
Yes. There was a crump and boom, and of course, as soon as you heard this, you did get down. If you weren't down, you did get down. I don't know whether you'd be sued. I was never caught with it. I preferred that to an aerial bombardment. I never ever did like that.
Did you ever get that in the trenches?
Oh yeah, yes. Not a lot, but sometimes some of the aeroplanes have come over and dropped these, what we thought were big bombs, were puny little things, you know. But it was the fear of the unknown, especially at night. That artillery were usually used when the big flaps were on.
Oh, yeah. Could you tell the different types of shell?
Oh yes.
Do you remember what they were?
There was the howitzers. The howitzers were something that went high up and up right down. They were big.
What do you call them?
The Germans. They were Germans. God, these big berthers. There was a great big things. We had our big ones were the 5.9s. The 5.9s were usually they were manned by the garrison artillery. They were the big guns then. But in the main, our main artillery was 18-pounders. Field artillery, 18-pounders.
What about other German shells you could recognise, besides the howitzer? Was there any other stuff?
No, I couldn't say there was anything particular that I knew of, you know.
Did you get used to artillery, or did it get worse?
No, you never get used to it. You never get used to it. You accept it, but you never get used to it. Well, I never did, anyway.
What would you do when there was a bit of a flap on and there's a fair number of shells landing in your area?
Well, you'd get it undercover the best way you could. In trenches, of course, they're only about this wide, you know. You were fairly well covered up. And unless it was a direct hit, well, or a shrapnel. Of course, shrapnel bursting up in the air. Of course, it had a bigger, wider field.
What about, were you ever under German mortar fire, the Minenwerfers?
No, I saw them. I saw them from a distance.
What could you see?
A great big cloud of dirty black smoke on a dull roof. And there were these Minenwerfers. I think that's what they called them.
Was there much sniping? Was that a big worry?
Depending on where you were. I have a recollection, a vivid recollection of one incident. Our front line ran through the remains of a village.
Do you know its name?
No, I don't know its name. And the front line were through the ruins of the houses. It wasn't a dug line. Now, the part I was in, my section was in, it was a house not badly knocked about, and it looked to me as though it had been a corner house of a street, or it may have been an isolated. But it wasn't isolated because there was plenty of other knocked about places. But ours were just there. Now the door, or I don't know if it was the door. I think it would be a window frame, a big one, and it faced diagonally. The German line over there, and this faced diagonally, and our line ran through this. Now, at the end of here was what I thought would be the guarding wall. And the sentry used to stand behind that wall. And on the second night we were there, one of the lads, he was hit in the doorway. Well, it was a big door and archway, because in that room there was the remains of a bed, and there was a lot of competition for having a lie on it, and you were undercover and all. And this fellow got hit.